For more now on whether the dollar is their problem or ours, we're joined by Daniel Gross. He's Slate's financial columnist. And Dan, we just heard how the weak dollar made shopping a very special treat for some foreigners in Florida. And you recently wrote about a similar experience you had in New York at FAO Schwarz.
Yeah, I visited FAO Schwarz, which is the iconic toy store that recently reopened after bankruptcy, and was stunned to be surrounded by so many Europeans, people speaking Spanish, French, and especially English with British accents. Not since the 1780s have so many British run rampant through New York.
What a treat. Okay, so the Bush administration has said publicly that it is in favor of a strong dollar, but privately maybe it's thinking the opposite, because doesn't a weaker dollar benefit some of the administration's key constituencies?
Yeah, the Bush administration's protestations that it wants a stronger dollar are a lot like when CEOs and politicians resign and say they want to spend more time with their family. They know that's what they're supposed to say, but everybody who's listening knows they don't really mean it. There are a few major constituencies of the Bush administration for whom the dollar can never be low enough. And those are farmers, who want their products to seem cheaper on world markets, and U.S. manufacturers. Manufacturers here struggle with high costs for healthcare, labor, etc. And in order to compete in global markets, it helps to have our currency be weak and other currencies be strong. And it's not just for foreign markets. When foreign goods seem more expensive because the dollar is weak, Americans might be more likely to buy an American car as opposed to a German-made one.
And Dan, who does the weak dollar hurt?
It hurts Americans who want to buy products and services abroad. If you are amassing a collection of Rioja wines or looking for a summer house in Provence, you're going to pay a lot more. More broadly, it generally means that our currency and our earnings purchase less in global markets than they have before. And in theory, a weaker dollar is supposed to lead to higher interest rates, which affect everybody.
Now, you write in Slate that in the larger picture, the United States is no longer the indispensable economic power that it once was. And what do you mean by that?
I think for the last few decades, the sort of mega trends of the liberalization of free trade and the movement of capital and people throughout the globe have really redounded to our benefit. New markets mean we have new places to export and new places to source products, like China. People come here to get educated and start businesses because the U.S. has been a magnet for investment for so long. And what we're starting to see is sort of hints that maybe the U.S. isn't the be-all and the end-all. We're still the world's wealthiest nation. We still attract a lot of people. But we're seeing the numbers of applications from foreigners to come get MBAs here decline pretty significantly. We're increasingly seeing other countries do what we've done and create free trade zones with their neighbors. We had NAFTA 10 years ago with Mexico and Canada. Now we're starting to see this recreated in Southeast Asia, in South America. And most of all, we're seeing the rise of China as a very important consumer. We have always been the world's predominant consumer, the consumer of last resort. Now that China is growing so rapidly, it is becoming a consumer and hence a customer for Brazil, Argentina, Taiwan, Asia.
So in general, for the long run, is this a good thing or a bad thing for the United States?
Well, the notion that our economic predominance in the world would be predicated on the fact that the rest of the world would learn nothing from us, would remain poor, would not be dynamic, that wasn't sustainable. And what we're starting to see is that all the people who came here to get their MBAs have gone home and taken some of those lessons with them. They're looking at the example of the U.S. about investing in productivity, pushing for free trade, looking at global markets. And so they're competing with us in a way many of these countries, like Brazil, never were in the past.
Opinion and analysis from Daniel Gross. He writes the Moneybox column for Slate. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thank you.